Good evening. We shrank. Last week it was huge. We have a new face tonight. How did you find out about us?
I've met you at the Wednesday Insight Meditation.
That's what it is. I knew it was a familiar face, but I didn't remember where. Glad you could come.
Good to be here.
Let's do introductions around.
Francois.
Randy.
Ken.
Samia.
Chris.
Donaldin.
Don.
Angie. Well, we're finished with the Heart Sutra, so we don't have a subject with a capital S tonight. But I wanted to talk a bit about what we're going to do next. We had a lot of suggestions when we started on this track with the Heart Sutra and various other suggestions, but one that kept coming up was the third patriarch's trust in mind, or faith in mind. And as I make my way around the world in my small way, I keep running into the whole question of trust in so many lives, in so many different ways. It seems to me the essence of the Buddha Dharma is about trust. And the third patriarch's way of talking about it is very straightforward and down to earth. It's not fancy. It's the one that begins, "The great way is without difficulty, just avoid picking and choosing." So it's about judgment, about the way our mind tends to characterize every single thing that we see as a good thing or a bad thing, a thing we want or a thing we don't want. It's how we confirm this made-up life of us, the life that, our fake life, in a way. And in the process, lose our sense of connection with everything. It's really often we prefer not to feel connected with everything because it challenges our sense of ourself. On the other hand, we become very lonely that way, and with a sense of separation. So it's troublesome both ways. It serves a purpose, but the purpose creates even more problems. Someone was telling me about a Tibetan practice for learning Bodhisattva way of going to a bus station or an airport, and just sitting there and watching the people as they go by, and watching your mind, and seeing what your mind does. Somebody old, somebody ugly, somebody overweight, somebody etc., etc. Make up story after story after story without having a clue who they are. Virginia Woolf wrote a wonderful short story about sitting in a train compartment, you know, where you sit face to face with strangers and a little closed in place for hours. And the lady across from her was a little mousy, sort of mournful looking creature. And Virginia Woolf in the story made up this complete very touching story about this woman across from her and how she never married and lived all by herself and had taken care of her old mother until it was too late to have, etc. And it just was such a tragic little story. And then when the train stopped and the woman got off, she was greeted by this handsome gentleman and a little girl who greeted her with open arms. "Oh, Mommy, we're so glad to see you, and we're going on a picnic," and big hugs all around. And she said, psh, there went her story. It was just nothing, made out of thin air. We don't think we're making things up. We don't think we're not all here all the time. But an awful lot of time we are. Life is a shaky business anyway. And we try all kinds of ways of shoring ourselves up so we don't feel quite so uncertain. So it's a brave practice that we've taken up to face our uncertainty, to face not knowing. And as I've been saying lately of cultivating that scientific mind of curiosity, asking, well, if we don't know, we can get interested in what's actually happening and use ourselves in that way. Become informed. You can get the book by Musong and Jan Bays, Chosen Bays, on Amazon for something like $6 if you're interested in buying the book. I'll be working from that book, but we're not going to pass it around and read it. We'll just talk about it comes in stanzas, so we can just talk about it stanza by stanza as we go along. Yes, that teeny little book that they sold for a quarter at East West Books when it was in Menlo Park 1,000 years ago.
Is that where the original book?
Yes.
Who made copies of it? I know I still
have. Oh,
did you do
that little book?
That teeny little book.
Is that the one?
Yeah. That was. I think there's still some.
Well, that would be great.
A bunch of them. I'm that kind of person.
Yeah. Well, but I still have mine.
I think there's a couple. But that, I don't think that's what you were talking about.
Yes, that is.
I think it is.
That is. But there are many translations, and Moose Songs, I think, is a little different from that one.
Was it Moose?
Musong.
Yeah. And but the title?
I think his is called Faith in Mind, or maybe it's Trust in Mind. It's one or the other. It means the same. And there's another book called either one of those things, so by somebody else.
Look it up because I'm real curious now. I'll put it out on a
part,
whatever,
listing
or thing or something.
And I'll Xerox the Musong version so we can all have a copy of it.
So it's a commentary.
It's a commentary, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that will be very helpful for us. I was going to suggest that we have a Shosan ceremony next Tuesday, but I think because it's the holidays, it might better be put off till the Tuesday after. Many of my teacher friends shut the Zendo over the holidays. they just don't they don't have a practice going on from now until the first of the year, or New Year's Eve, I guess, everyone gets together. I've always been sorry about that enough to not want to do that. I always think keeping the walls warm and offering this quiet place when everything is especially frantic is helpful. So on the 5th, will it be the Tuesday after the new year, we'll do a Shosan ceremony, which I think some of you already know. It's like the Shuso ceremony, only the teacher is on the hot seat. So Donna Lynn is smiling. It's our opportunity to meet each other, among each other. It's a little bit like Doksan, because you can bring a really powerful question from your own life to it. It provides a space for teacher-student to meet each other. And it can turn into a kind of Dharma combat, not quite like they do in Dharamsala, where they're making gestures and clapping their hands and all of that. But it's challenging in a way. Challenge the teacher challenges back. You can learn a lot. There were twice when I learned a lot from my teacher, just from the Shosan ceremony. The first time was when I was very new to practice. And you come up to the teacher and you do a prostration. And then you stand up in Gassho and look him in the eye. And I looked Koban in the eye. And I couldn't remember what I was going to ask. It was gone. And I stood there for a long time, just in total silence. And then I said, "Where did the words go?" And he said, "Back where they came from." Oh. So it's a very cool thing to do. It's a wonderful thing to do. It means you need some trust and some courage, which is part of the reason I want to do this, because I think we all have it, and we need to keep using it, need to keep cultivating it, so that we become freer in the world, more at ease in the world. We have so much to give. Every single one of us, so much to give. But it takes courage and trust. And we're better to develop it than among each other in Sangha, in a place of safety and trust to begin with. So that's my plan. And I'll bring some kind of talk next week. I just started a retreat of my own at home. I'm going to take these next almost 2 weeks. The first few days I'm sort of entering slowly because there's so many other things to do. But I'm sitting a lot during the day. And starting on Thursday, I'll sit all day and evening for 4 days. And then I'll sort of ease back into sitting and writing. I'm making it a combination writing and sitting retreat. So I've turned off the telephone. I've turned off the computer. I'm completely... it feels like I'm trying to cut off from the world, but the truth is I feel like the world is much closer because I'm so quiet. And I'm not thinking about things so much. It's just being quietly with everything. It's a very wonderful feeling. And I would hope that we all have a chance to do something like it. I decided to do this after the last session, the Arcata session, because I realized that even though I go to many sessions during the year, I don't really get to sit very much. Nobody else is talking. Everyone else is, you know, sitting. I'm talking all the time. Either creating a talk or giving a talk or meeting in Doksan. So, and I love to do it. It's a joy. But sometimes I feel, I see everybody going into the Zendo and I think, oh, they get to sit. Oh, that's not fair. So I thought, well, there's nothing to say I can't sit. I can just close the door in my own house and sit. So I've tried to set it up. I have food in the house, so I won't have to go out. And I've got a candle and some incense and a flower, and it feels really good. There are a lot of places we can go to do retreat. You know, Vajrapani has huts, wonderful huts. It's not a hut at all. It's a beautiful little cabin. Shikoji you can do also. But to do it in the middle of one's own life and find the meaning of it in there, I think that's what we're all working toward in the first place with this so-called lay practice, trying to live the practice as even monks would do, as we drive our cars around and do what we do all day. It's an incredible challenge, and I think it's what, funny thing to say, I think it's what we're supposed to do in some way, it feels to me. I think for the last time, I have... put together this booklet that I do every year, have been doing every year, which I give to everybody. Thank you, Samia. Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by the last time?
I don't think I'm going to do it again. Thank you. But who knows? So are there questions about anything? Samia?
Would you share a little bit about this? Or like, I know it's not, what did you call it when you face the teacher and ask him a question?
Doksan.
No, the other.
Oh, Shosan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not time for it yet, but can I jump the gun and ask?
Sure.
If, and you don't have to answer if anyone of the poems in here or anything that when you were writing them, you thought that you would want to share with us in person or read it or not.
Well, mostly the booklet is not my work. I mean, I made the booklet.
Oh, that's true. You think? Yeah.
But what happens is that I read a lot,
right?
And I read all over.
Uh-huh.
So when something touches me,
right,
I put it in my journal for that day, and then at the end of the year, which is a real interesting thing to do, I go back through the journal and pull them out. It's like pulling out raisins out of raisin bread or something, and find some way of putting them in a little book. And that's what that is. I've been doing that for a number of years. I don't remember. I've got a whole thing full of them, but I haven't counted to see how many there are.
And you said somebody collected them, and what did they?
Oh, somebody collected the poems, because I write a poem. Instead of getting a Christmas card every year, I make a little, just a very, yeah, kind of a waka, kind of a Japanesey thing about nature, usually. And Stephen Truelove, who is a composer, he lives up in Ashland now, took a lot of those poems and made an opera, which is, I don't know, he's recorded it and he sent me the whole manuscript of it. It's very, very new music. He worked with, who's the German man who just died last year? Anyway, a very, very advanced musician, so Stephen's music is very advanced also. But it's also very beautiful. So,
how long is it? Is it really long? Does anything stand on its own?
Well, he also made another little thing, actually, that he sent me just not too long ago, where it's, I'm trying to remember. It's just a little group. I think it's one person singing some of them. Very pretty. That one is really, really pretty. I'll have to listen to that again.
Are they out?
No. No, I don't think they're for sale.
But they were for sale at one point?
Yes. Yeah, and recorded. So, yeah. Yeah.
I was talking with our technical person here, and we had permission that she might be able to load a portion of it on our site.
Wow. That would be fun.
Add some music to our website.
I'll have to ask him. I don't know. He copyrights everything, I'm sure. Now, I don't copyright anything, so...
I wonder if it's on YouTube.
Well, look up Stephen Truelove.
It might be on the internet. I've run into it Googling Angie.
Really?
Yeah.
Stephen's music?
Well, about the music.
Ah.
I don't know if the music itself is.
My gosh. Well, I'll find out. And the booklet quotations I started years ago when I was first involved with Zen and Buddhism, because I felt it was being too special. And since we had a Japanese teacher and we're doing everything in a very Japanese way, our sesshins, you know, are just pretty precise about how to do, even though Koban was not anything like a regular Zen center, much more relaxed than that. But to me, it was a whole nother culture. And I thought, if it's true, if what we're saying and experiencing is true, it has to be true here, too, in the middle of America right now. And I started realizing as I was reading that the Dharma was shining up in every kind of place. It was shining up in Scientific American. It was coming up in the New York Review of Books, in Moby Dick. It became a kind of wonderful search for me, or confirmation, as I was trying to understand and live the Dharma, to find it under my own feet. And since I love to read and read a lot, to find it shining up from what I was experiencing in other minds. Books are so fabulous because you plunge into someone else's mind, which of course is our own mind too, which is why we do it. And we find treasures there. But I've been thinking as I put this together that I first did it because I felt I had nothing else to give. And I wanted to give something at Christmas, and I wanted to give something out of myself. And so I made this little project as my sort of only thing I had to offer to people. And now I don't feel quite so poverty-stricken anymore. So I'm not sure I need to do it anymore. I'll see how it feels next year.
At the beginning, or near the beginning of your talk, you said something of the effect of that we create stories at the expense of connectedness, and yet we don't do that, we feel lonely. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite understand that. What is it that you were saying?
Trying to remember what I said now.
I've been dying to ask since that.
I see. What I meant was that as we create a self for ourselves, often in order to feel less precarious about ourselves, it also creates a sense of precariousness, because it is precarious. It's all made up, for one thing, and it's changing all the time. And so it creates, because we've made this thing in between us and everything else, creates a sense of separation, which tends to make us feel safer in the short run, even though it makes us shakier in the long run.
That because we create these the stories, that is, we're not really seeing what's there.
Yes.
And that creates a sense of separation.
Isolation. Yeah.
And so to have the connection then is to abandon the stories.
Take the risk. Abandon the story. Yeah. Well, it's about 8 o'clock.